Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the morning show brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Tex Homer, Eric Nalin once again in the woods, Coach Dub below. I am back in my hometown and not broadcasting from my grandmother's anymore. All right, guys. We did last Wednesday, me, Evan, and Nash on the Wednesday show. We took our lads' depth chart and it was wrong. And so we talked about everywhere that it was kind of wrong and speculated a little bit. Well, since then, we got Eric on the case, and he's been able to get us sourced depth charts, what we think or what makes the most sense prior to fall camp. After fall camp, we're going to go back and look and see what we got right and what's changed. But right now, going into fall camp, we feel pretty good about this group. Splendid Daddy, good morning. Roaster, good morning. James, good morning. We are going to lead off. Morning to you, Edby, with offense. And shout out our boy Will doing some graphic design for us on a Sunday, getting this out. These are tedious to make, guys. You got to pull each one of these photos separately from, you know, some roster website. Then you got to get all the names and the numbers. It's just a thousand little actions you have to do. So shout out to Will for making these for us. They look really cool. All right, let's work offensive line out. Okay, let's start at left tackle. With Trevor Goosby, and we'll also kind of talk through this depth here. Eric, you can give us kind of the lead, what you're thinking on these, and then Coach, chime in with your thoughts.
All right, cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, our information points to them feeling like they have got three potentially really good tackles long-term. Trevor Goosby, Brandon Baker, and, of course, Nick Brooks. Nick Brooks has higher upside than Baker probably, but obviously he's a true freshman. You don't want to play true freshman unless their names are is Kelvin Banks. But also I've been told recently don't sleep on Jaden Chapman being a key player at some point down the road. Now maybe he ends up at guard. Hopefully we don't have to see that one of the backups this year. Nobody's ready like Trevor Goosby was last year. We knew Trevor Goosby was ready to play. Now we didn't know he was going to play that well, but we knew he was ready to play. Right now we're hearing great things about Nick Brooks long-term, early round draft pick at left tackle. That's the word. He hasn't been in the program nearly as long as Goosby was. He hasn't been as battle tested and practiced as Goosby was. So we're on pins and needles about offensive tackle depth.
Yeah, you can see that. And then, so looking at left, Jaden Chapman, interesting. Nick Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be important. Brandon Baker is going to be a question over at right tackle for talking tackles. The younger guy, he moved well. He's modern day, right?
Yeah. He's going to be solid this year, I think, but I don't, you know, thinking he's going to be, I mean, he might have a better career than Cam Williams just because Cam Williams came and played 1 year and was really kind of iffy. I don't think he's going to be a dominant tackle at any point, but I think he can be good for Texas for this year. You know, solid is the word on him. We're getting some questions already. Brooks at left tackle from Ed B. Brooks came in and really hit the ground running in winter offseason workouts, lost weight, leaned up, started moving a lot better. Peeled off some useless weight and really hit the ground running. He became most well known for that off-field issue. But aside that, he's done everything right. And their sources are extremely high on him. Again, the only problem is lack of experience.
Yeah, for sure.
Makes sense.
And then Nash pointed out last week that Cam Williams was the second most penalized offensive player in college football.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that's not surprising to anybody, I don't think. And another thing we need to point out on offensive line is it's not a clear line of ascension.
Right.
Whereas, yeah. Second team, if Brandon Baker goes down, it doesn't mean Andre Kojo immediately goes to start. They might reshuffle things around.
Yeah, and normally kind of with center and guards, you see that take a lot too. So Kojo came in at, 16 years old, right?
16 years old and at about 360 pounds.
Yeah.
he's done a lot of work to change his body. They just don't, you know, I think he might move like a guard. And then if he's a guard, he's a really tall guard. So I don't know what to expect from him this year. A lot of these guys are a year early. It's just hard to know exactly how good they're going to be. Again, we're not hearing the buzz about them being ready to ball out this season.
That's the big thing. If you're a fan, you don't want to see any injuries at the offensive line because it becomes question marks basically behind every single starter. Right. So health is going to be a really important aspect of the offensive line. Okay, let's talk. Let's talk center, and then because it's going to potentially have some of that movement stuff. So center Cole Hudson, big dude, bigger than Jake Majors, and he was out of Frisco something, one of the 900 schools there. Yeah, but
they ran triple option.
Hey, if you remember, they didn't know what a pass was. Yeah. It was all run blocking. So hopefully he can hold up better versus the nose than Jake can. I was rewatching ULM the other day, and that nose was killing Jake Majors. I don't know what it was, but we didn't have a lot of size there. And Cole Hudson should solve that. He's a bigger guy, and then, of course, working on double teams. Is he going to have the intimate scheme knowledge of a 90-year starter in Majors? Probably not, but size should be a different factor there. And then someone did ask about – let me see here. Daniel Cruz, third in this lineup. I thought he was fighting for playing time.
No, he's not. Connor Robertson is ahead of Daniel Cruz. Connor Robertson could play this year, which means that if there's an injury at guard, Cole Hudson might be the backup guard. Yeah. If Connor's ready to go. We know Cole is a very good drive blocker. Putting it all together, doing the center things, the mental things, the getting out of your stance quickness, getting on the move. We're not too sure about that, but people are excited about him. They think he's going to be pretty good. Obviously, he's going to be a better drive blocker at the point of attack. We know that without a doubt. We've seen him move guys. We've seen him move players in Tuscaloosa. What was that? That was when he was a sophomore. So he'll get after it. That's part of the reason we're optimistic about interior run game being improved over last year. Is we're just a little bit heftier at the point of attack, or DJ Campbell is going to be the best version of himself.
It's a good lead in. Let's talk right guard. DJ Campbell returns, and I really respect DJ Campbell for not trying to keep up with the Joneses and make sure that he left when Banks left. I think there was some of that psychological pressure with Cam trying to keep up with your classmates, and Campbell decided to come back. But more importantly, Eric's reported that he's taking a leadership role and a vocal role and accountability for this line. So I think right guard is an interesting position to watch.
Yeah.
He's, if you go back to his high school tape, he was really, really good on the move. He kind of had all the guard. He could do the outside zone, smaller guard stuff, but he could also do the point of attack land mover stuff too. It sounds like he's putting it all together right now. And I think gap schemes are going to make him a lot of fun to watch. linebackers are going to get their fill of him this year, I think.
Yeah, he's aggressive. And there was a clip in high school of him.
Yeah, he's pulling around.
Well, not even that. He would knock guys out of their shoes. No, it wasn't even a huddle. It was 7-on-7. Like, they were doing 7-on-7 at their high school. He was playing tight end, and he was catching balls over the middle. And I still stand that Campbell could be the greatest H-back we've probably ever seen. And I mean that with honor, because I love H-backs and fullbacks. He can catch. He can smack dudes. He can move. Yeah. I mean, if he played that position, he'd be unstoppable too.
He's the rare offensive lineman high school prospect that could play D-tackle. Very rare guy. I remember talking to his high school coach, Tony DeArmond, about it in real time. And, Tony thought he should play DT. I think, Campbell kind of has that mentality on the field. You see, he's always needling people. When he first got to Texas, he hung out with all the D tackles. he's really grown into his offensive line role now, and it's all coming together for him. He just has to go do it on the field this year.
Yeah, and then behind him, Nate Kibble and Devin Coleman, one of the Coleman brothers. What's up with Kibble?
Kibble's going to be good. I just think he's the most logical starter to replace Campbell. They've been high on him since the day he stepped on campus. I've heard he's a year away. A year away just means usually getting stronger, playing faster, processing faster. It's not the easiest offense to learn.
I would say after Ohio State, it's not the easiest offense to learn. After Ohio State, when we have that run of a few games that should be easier, that's when I'm excited to see the young guys.
Absolutely.
So it's like that's where I think we need to get a ton of reps if we can for the second strings, because – we hope everything goes smoothly, but sometimes that doesn't occur.
I want to see some ugly second halves in September. I don't care what the first is. I want the first team offense and defense to come in and do their things, and then I want to see the bench get emptied out.
Same here. Yeah. Pretty much at every position. Yeah. And then left guard, Umi Azulu, who I we got to figure out where he's at, because I guess he came on a little slower than we thought. But what's the update there before I make any statements?
Yeah, he came back in summer workouts and was putting up his best numbers of all time. And right. You know, when you get a month off from the program, you know, it's not fully off, but you have a lot more freedom than you normally do. And to come back and running as fast as ever, as strong as ever, that says good things. That says he's locked in. So I'm excited to hear about him in August. You know, it's harder to glean much about the offensive line, especially the interior offensive line, during summer workouts. You know, when they're doing 7-on-7, they're doing one-on-ones versus the D tackles. It's hard to get a good sense of what's going on without pads on. But you know, the fact that he's moving better, stronger, that says it seems like he's locked in and ready to go. And that family, I think, man, it's going to come off at some point. They're showing great patience. We're here, you know, Zena. I was doing the depth chart yesterday for defense, and I was reminded, oh, he's only a redshirt freshman. It seems like he's been there longer. So, you know, Neto's still got 2 years of eligibility. I think the future's still bright for him.
Yeah, and then the depth behind Neto's a little shaky. We have Connor Stroh and Jackson Christian at that guard position. So if left guard were to go down, I think that's when you would see a clear move from Hudson to left guard and then Robertson to center.
Yeah, potentially. Or, you know, they could even move Chapman if they feel better about him. That's going to be a question mark. But, yeah, I think Cole Hudson might be the backup guard, the number three guard. I'm not sure. One thing we should mention about Hayden Connor – or Neto Umizulu is a big upgrade in the run game over Hayden Connor. So Hayden wasn't the most physical guy. He was more of a shield. Umizulu can actually move people. So, again, we're worried about depth on the offensive line. A lot of these guys are highly inexperienced behind the starters.
Yeah. Hiding the secret weapon, nibbling on the graphic. I see you, Will. Yeah, I don't know. Was he put in a clear category in your depth chart, Eric? Maybe he missed it.
You know what? I think I might have forgot that, but I was writing about him so much recently. I'm like, man,
we've done like 5 minutes on each show about him. So maybe
I was thinking the staff might be mad at me, you know, talking about him. But So how would Niblett fit in? If we go to 21 personnel, two running backs, like on the defensive side, we go to we also show a base look as well. Yeah. So if we show the 21 personnel, then we probably could have done 12 personnel for tight ends too, but that's the graphic's going to be too small. We're not going to be able to see it.
Yeah, some of this you just have to kind of go with 11 personnel because it's the easiest way to display names. But Weapon X, he was strategically left off, so no opponent could watch this video. They'll have no idea about him.
Hey, they got a certain position on NCAA 26. It's called gadget player. You can slide any player into that role and have them do everything. So put Niblett as the gadget player, man.
Yeah, if we put him at running back here, he would be after Gibson because that's not really his game. But if they go to 21 personnel, he's the first guy. He's the first guy in that look.
Cool. All right, let's look at tight end. Clearly a lot of names here. So we get injuries from Cal. Super excited about that. 90% plus catch rate. Going to be a chain mover. He's going to be wide open like Helm is. So he's going to have some good yak. And then we have right behind him Jordan Washington, who we were trying to get ready in the spring in the blocking game. Special athlete. Winston, who's impressed as kind of that full tight end, somebody that can find the zone, more H-backy stuff. Eric's favorite player of all time to ever exist, Nick Townsend. And then Spencer Shannon, who we've kind of been waiting to come along, man. Really tall player, lanky player, hoping he could be that Y on the line. But as we can see here, lower on the depth chart. And then Will Randall as well at the very bottom. Let's kind of talk through the guys, though, starting with Jack Injuries and what he's been able to do is kind of showing up as a leader.
Yeah, he's had a good summer. Clearly, him and Arch are trying to expedite their relationship. Arch targets him quite a bit in 7-on-7. He's going to be your starter. He's going to be the guy that gets 50 catches, and he's going to be your next draft pick. And then Jordan Washington's going to do that after him, probably in one season. Hopefully, we see Jordan Washington play a good amount this year because I feel like he's got a chance to be a three-year player. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the dynamic duo, at least the potential of Emory Winston and Nick Townsend, they can be on the field together doing a lot of different things.
Cool.
I like seeing Nick Townsend up to about 240 pounds on the roster. I buy that listing just because I've seen him at, you know, 235 before. He did drop down at 220 at one point. These guys fluctuate pretty, a lot, depending on what they're doing, you know, running track or whatever. And then, you know, I think we'll see Spencer Shannon this season. Again, if we talk about 12 personnel a little bit more on here, you know, we'll see. I think Spencer's probably going to play a decent amount in September. You know, on the line, sometimes he's a solo tight end. It's not really what they're going to do against Ohio State, obviously, but he can play this season. He's coming along, longer curve guy. And then, you know, finished out with Will Randall. Will Randall's, I mean, that guy could be playing at Tulane, no problem.
Sure.
It's just Texas, yeah. There's just different guys ahead of him.
Yeah. But tight end going into next year, too, is going to be cool. This room has a lot of promise. Like, all these names look solid, especially the first four look solid.
Like, a lot of the positions on the roster, they'll have a guy that's, you know, a true freshman or, you know, not expected as much, but he's more talented than the guy that's ahead of him. But you see that all over the place on this roster.
Yeah, you get hype about next year looking at when you actually see the depth chart on all of these. All right, before we go to wide receiver, running back, guess what? We'll tell you guys who's going to start at quarterback, too, after this. Pretty crazy. But before we do that, let's hear a word from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
Coach, that's going to be you in a second, man. You're going to have to get the girls ready for back to school, dude. You're going to be at Academy, dude. Hey, man, you might get some tax-free weekend going on, dude. I just happened to go in there last time. I didn't even know. I was buying some like clothes to jog, and they're like, it's tax-free weekend. I was like, wonderful. Who had no idea? All right. Yeah. Let's do wide receivers, and let's start at the boundary. So the boundary receiver, these are always hard to name. Are they an X? Are they a boundary receiver? Sark moves them every 9 seconds, but this is just so we can get our brain around it. And it's important when you say boundary receiver, a lot of times they can be soloed in less space. The tight end can be moved over to some type of trips, but you can think a lot of one-on-one type stuff with a boundary receiver. Those are the receivers you think of typically. They're big, fast. They can go up and get it. They can beat guys in single coverage, that kind of stuff. So when we say boundary, think of those traits, and then it makes sense that we would have Ryan Wingo batting first there.
Yeah, absolutely. He's you know, for Texas to win the national championship, Ryan Wingo has to break out and almost have a season like his classmates did last year, Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams. They need that sort of season out of him, and he's fully capable of it. He's having a good offseason, very hard worker. I mean, in some ways, just like the perfect modern day college prospect. Didn't hold Texas over a barrel on NIL. Yeah, he's getting paid. Of course he is. He should. But just like really happy to be at Texas, hard worker, does everything the right way. Awesome, awesome dude. And then I put I think the only or I have on here is with Kalik Lockett and Jamie French. And it's really hard to differentiate those two. They both had similar issues in the spring, kind of, you know, acclimating to college still. I won't say struggle's too strong of a word because they were so new. But definitely showing strides over the summer workouts, 7-on-7, putting the weight room to good use, getting stronger, you know, going up against some physical defensive backs. True freshmen are often going to struggle. Those guys are coming along, though. Jamie French also got work at the slot during the spring, but Dalen McCutcheon has just grabbed that by the horn. So I think he's going to be an outside receiver, but he could play either outside, you know. I just have him over a boundary for symmetry, so we have three across the board.
Yeah, I was going to say French to me would be good at field. Kalik is a boundary receiver with his contested catch ability. So, yeah, I can see French at field going forward. But Eric's right. We need some visual harmony here. So, good call. And good restraint, Eric. Only one or. a lot of people, you go to these depth charts and have – even when the coaches release depth charts, because depth charts are often very political – so they'll get like a lot of ores, so the player doesn't come in your office to say like, "What do you mean he's starting over me?"
I did 1 year. I said I've got more ores than a Viking boat. But, you got to, you know, you either have information or you don't, you know. So and you got to know when the coaches are being political. I feel. I mean, this is pretty much how the wide receivers are. That's there's not much guesswork here.
Yeah. And then at field, we have the field receiver. Generally, that's going to be the receiver that's in more space. They're going to be at the end of trips. They're going to be a kind of faster. they're known as kind of the flanker, the guy who's off the ball and can move in traditional offenses. Of course, Sark moves it around. What's interesting here is Emmett's not known for his like necessarily movability. He's known for his reliability, but it's just cool to see Emmett in a picture of him starting here. This is our projection. I'm really excited about the Stanford prospect. So let's talk a little bit of Mosley.
Well, that's where he is right now. He's outside in 7-on-7, so I kept him there. When they signed him, I projected that he'd be at slot and then move DeAndre outside. But I think they really like DeAndre's vertical ability out of the slot. And, again, like you talked about earlier, they're going to move these guys all over the place. You're not going to know where they are. Post-snap, more important than pre-snap. And then, you know, behind him, they brought in Emmett not just for his ability. Like, I don't think he's going to be as productive as he was as a freshman at Stanford just because, you know, they didn't have the weapons that Texas does. But he's going to do a whole lot of little things right. That trio right there is going to be a very good blocking trio. It's going to be the running back's best friends. They're going to help each other spring. You might actually see some wide receiver screens work because, you're not going to have Isaiah Bond trying to block for somebody. Question any play design that has Isaiah Bond blocking for somebody.
Dude, it would be Isaiah Bond or Worthy as lead blocks. And I'd be like, Sark, come on, man. And I know what Sark's doing. Sark's like, look, we're basically going to take a loss. So in the third quarter, he can act like he's going to block and go for a fade. I get it. But also, you could just do that in the third quarter. They're going to fall for it regardless. Yeah. You don't really have to set it up that much.
Yep.
I mean, I've been watching a lot of Ben Johnson, Detroit Lions offense. A lot of good YouTubers, Dan Casey covering them. Mm-hmm. You have these blocking receivers. They don't even have to be the body type, but they're willing, man. It makes all the difference, man, in the run game and in the screen game. And I really like what Chris Jackson has done, where he's picking these receivers that have NFL totality, blocking and catching. I really like this style wide receiver room, frankly, more than the past, even though we've had some killers.
Yeah, Mosley's going to take some poor corner soul, and he's not going to want to compete at all after the first quarter.
Yeah.
Livingstone behind Mosley will block too. You know, he's 6'4". He's going to put that to good use. 6'4" and long arms. So he's going to have the same advantages that an offensive tackle with long arms has when he goes to block. So Livingstone behind Mosley. See, I'm loving this changeup, man. They're thinking the white guy's coming in. They can just, you know, fall asleep on him, and Livingstone's going to run right by him. Livingstone's probably the second fastest guy on the team if you measure by miles per hour behind Ryan Niblett. So I like that changeup between Mosley and Livingstone. But then again, you're not going to sacrifice much physicality because Livingstone will block too.
Yeah, and it's going to – in those three games after Ohio State, you're going to have to watch out because I think Livingstone's going to come in and excite fans too. So some potential fun controversy ahead as always. And then Aaron Butler at the third spot at field.
Yeah, just very talented, still putting it together, fast. His hands betrayed him a little bit during spring ball, and then he kind of regrouped. But as far as upside, he's got a lot of upside. You know, it's Ryan Wingo to me, and then after that, it's kind of wide open who has the most upside in the room. And Butler is right there. That guy can route people up, electric athlete, still putting it together.
Yeah, when Overtime did that documentary that I talk about with him, I just paid attention to his training. I did the same thing with Tyler Atkinson's video that I was watching. Yeah. I'm trying to watch what drills they're doing, what moves. And keep in mind, half that video, he's training with DJ. Mm-hmm. But pay attention to their training tape. And he was training like a pro wide receiver when you watch them. It was all those same kind of drills. So we'll see if Butler puts it together. But as far as like receiver skill, I really liked even what he was doing when he was young, even before he got on campus. Let's see here.
Hey, throw that question up. There you go. Yeah. he's repped at punt return for sure. Ryan Niblett is a starter at punt return. At least that's the way it looks right now. Of course, that could change. And then kick return is going to be DeAndre Moore and I think Trey Wisner. Trey Wisner kind of was more of a lead blocker. They want the ball in DeAndre's hands, but Trey will kind of go out there like Jordan Whittington would. But Butler's got all the skill in the world to be a punt returner, but a lot of that has to do with Ryan Niblett or with reliability and trust. And Ryan Niblett has that trust of the staff right now.
I was going to say you used Ryan Niblett as a synonym for reliability, so that's probably a good trait.
Probably how the coaches feel about him. The guy like Niblett is a coach favorite.
Dude, rewatching the games last year, I don't think we're going to get the level of excitement, though, at punt return as Silas Bolton.
I'm good.
God, dude.
Go to the bathroom during the punt return.
Dude, just flirting with disaster. Never dropped it, though. Like, or if he did, he got it back. But, man, he made punt returns very exciting. All right, in the slot, we have DeAndre Moore. We talked about maybe can Moore go outside because we constantly hear, you know, sources saying, like, y'all are going to be surprised by his speed. Y'all are going to be surprised. And that always means some crazy combine number. But so we thought maybe Moore outside, but they really like these slot fades here where the field receiver can sit down, try to bring a corner. And then you can one-on-one the slot with the safety, which is a good matchup for Moore. He's also closer to the action. Arch is never afraid to throw over the middle, so it's good access throws too. So DeAndre Moore could have a big season deep this year.
Yeah, he's working like a contract year too. I think he's gone. I've got sources that question whether or not he's going to be able to blow up to that degree. The way he's working behind the scenes, you could tell he's trying – not that he's trying to leave Texas necessarily. He's just trying to be the next guy that leaves early to try the NFL. Yeah, he's – I'm predicting him – I think he's going to have probably the second most receptions on the team, but he's going to have his share of big plays from the slot. And, again, he's going to have – I think the NFL realizes they missed on Jordan Whittington, and this is going to be a way to make up on that one because he does a lot of things Jay Witt did, but he's – he's vertically faster, and he's a more natural. We've seen his issues with hands, but he does a better job of tracking the ball than Whittington did. Whittington wasn't really a deep vertical threat unless he's working back to the ball. DeAndre is, you know, he's going to get past safeties and convert it more often than not. He's being a lot more reliable than we saw at times last year. I know he had his drop issues.
Yeah. Yeah. And Arch, you know, Arch likes to throw it deep, man.
Yeah, he had mismatched what they do with the slot. It had some film up of him versus us versus Georgia. You know, the little fake bluff block screen, and he called to come back inside, made a guy miss, and then went to the house. Like, not many people can do that, right? So he's a mismatch. There's going to be some times where linebackers line up over him in the slot, and it's like, all right, I know where I'm going with the ball right before the snap. He's going to kill some people from the slot.
Seven sure. touchdowns and 39 receptions, and he dropped a couple touchdowns too.
Yeah. All right, number two, Dalen McCutchen, also a freshman, came in with the five stars, right? Kalik and Jamie French, but as Eric's pointed out, seized the opportunity through his ability, but also just mentality. So what's the future looks bright for McCutchen?
Yeah, well, Charlie can handle this one too, because we were like minded on this, where we thought we're not surprised that he's the most ahead out of those receivers.
Yeah, I feel like McCutchen was going to come in ready, man. He's trained for this, right? He can run every route. He knows when to sit down in zone, understands concepts at an early age, which is rare to see so many freshmen. But I think you come in and the way he performed in the spring, he earned the trust of the coaches because he knew what to do on and off the field from the classroom, applied to the field, man. So I knew McCutchen, like I said, since he was a freshman. And this guy's been competing versus better guys all his life, right? Competing, trying to get earning playing time. Parker Livingstone being one of them. So it's not a surprise to hear that he's doing so well so early. I just feel like he just picked up the game so fast, digested the playbook, and was able to perform, man, at a consistent level as a freshman. When you see those kind of guys, they end up being special.
Yeah. Source said that just like the baton went from Jordan to DeAndre, it's going to go from DeAndre to Dalen.
Cool. All right, and then Michael Terry. So I was talking to Paul about this last Tuesday. We were trying to figure out what's Michael Terry's position, but and I've been thinking about it. I think – Michael Terry should play the Michael Terry position. And what I mean by that, Eric's a 49ers fan. What would Shanahan do here? You know, so it's like, look, he's going to, if you put him at slot, he's going to be a mismatch size-wise, athleticism on a safety. If you put him at running back, he's going to be athleticism mismatch for a linebacker. You can put him at tight end, similar thing. So what, I don't know if it's 12 or 21 or how it works, but if you could get Michael Terry in the backfield on situations, move him around, do unique things, pretty much any spot you can put him at, there's some type of mismatch that he can create disadvantage. So I want to see Michael Terry going forward as a unique player that you don't necessarily know exactly what you would call him, but they have some things designed for him. So, Eric, what do you think about Michael Terry?
Well, I mean, that's kind of how they recruited him. You know, offensive weapon is what – once I heard that, that's I immediately put in a RPM for Texas on his official visit. They went all in. They had, you know, A.J. Milwee was recruiting him, Tashard Choice, Chris Jackson, all those guys were recruiting him. So sort of as an offensive weapon, but you have to put him somewhere. You have to put him in some room. He's not going to be isolated with Sark.
He's just by himself training off to the side. Yeah, like, just tell me when I'm in. I'll catch it.
Yeah. So right now he's at receiver. You could tell that when the ball's in his hands, he's not your typical athlete that's his size. He moves extremely well. I think there's a chance that that gets carved out over time. I don't think we're going to see that this year necessarily. You know, that's because, you know, who are you taking the ball out of their hands if you're doing stuff like that with them? I think he's going to have to earn that in practice. You know, so they'll bring that along slowly in practice and see if it works. And if it works, they'll take it to the field. But yeah, you're right. You know, Shanahan was really good at getting the most out of Debo. Shanahan does a lot of interesting things with the fullback, Kyle Juszczyk, too. So there's a lot of different ways you can get him involved. But I my expectations for his true freshman year have been very low since pretty much the jump. But you know, I'm curious to see how it builds out over time.
Yeah. Next year there will be a Michael Terry position though, because I'm the one that gives all the information, so I can cheat this to my advantage for next year's depth chart. There will be a Michael Terry slot.
Terry's going to be a scout team demon. They're going to find out a lot about him, what he can do. Playing quarterback, running back, receiver, going against the first-team defense every single week. So I think they'll find out exactly what he's really, really good at.
Yeah, he would have played probably like five quarterbacks last year because they faced so many guys that were more, you know, better athletes than they were passers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good call. He's gonna earn his stripes on scout team. And that's when he realized that, oh, man, this guy shouldn't be on scout team. Aaron Butler had the same thing last year. He was making plays against the top corners. That's going to be a good proving ground for Terry.
The big theme with the NFL is, you know, teams have gone too high, right, to try to slow down the passing attack. And because I'm interested to see how quick college starts doing the same. So we heard that we want to go to a lot of single high on defense. To me, that's showing that maybe we realize that the teams have now seen too high, have now countered with running more. Now you'll counter with defense. We'll see. I think you're going to see like old school football come back because of this. Yeah. I say that because we have a lot of wide receivers here, and Sark can beat them with some concepts, but the run game is probably going to be more important than we realized this year, and that's going to be a big factor. We have two guards and left guard and right guard that can move well on counter powers. We have a quarterback. Oh, by the way, Arch Manning is going to start. We'll talk quarterback in a second. They can do reads, that kind of stuff. We have to see how the tight ends block. That's going to be a big thing, but I expect running to be a more important schematic element just across kind of college football, of course, the NFL as well. All right, let's talk depth chart behind Arch, because I've heard a lot of people, you know, the Twitter people being like, Matthew Caldwell in second, you know, Trey Owens is my guy. So what's the deal with the depth chart on quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, fans tend to underrate they tend to overrate what they saw in a very small sample size, which they saw Trey Owens have a very good spring game his freshman year. Obviously, there was no spring game this season. And then they underrate experience. And that's why they always think the five-star high school kid is going to jump the guy that's been playing for 3 years, which isn't often the case. So Caldwell coming in, they brought him in for his experience. And I think that, you know, Sark isn't – it's not like Caldwell, they're handing it to him. He's got to go in and earn it. But we know that they brought him in because they liked his experience, steady hand, and ability to operate pretty much the same specific playbook where – Trey Owens is going to be more limited in what he can do compared to Arch or even KJ Lacy, just because he doesn't have the movement skills that, you know, they're going to want to bootleg the quarterback out. They're going to want to run the quarterback a little bit more than they have in the past. Caldwell can operate the RPO system. Caldwell can do that. Trey Owens is a guy that would need more experience as a true dropback passer, pocket passer, reading defense, going through his progressions and beating you with his mind and his arm. That's tough to do as a young quarterback.
Yeah. And then KJ Lacy's a lot of fun too, man. Watch that high school tape. Him battling forward with Dia coming in. The quarterback room is going to be interesting battles going forward. Let's see here. Caldwell has passed Owens. I want to give it in its actual way. And then Owens will transfer next year.
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, this is a projected starting offense. And so that's my projection based on how August is going to go. But why would I don't know why if Caldwell's leaving after this season. So that's, you know, that I don't think that affects Owens at all. Owens is going to have to compete. You know, you're not just gifted the spot, you know, like Mac Jones. He beat out Bryce Young when everybody, myself included, thought Young was going to beat him out. Like I said, Owens needs experience and time in the program because, you know, we've seen what happens when a pocket passer doesn't process as quickly as he needs to. That's what happened with the passing game breaking down last year. And so to be a pocket passer, you have to process very quickly and you have to threaten the entire field with your arm. That kind of sums up Quinn's limitations last year and why he ended up going in the seventh round. Trey's, you know, you need experience to do that. And I don't think Trey quite has that experience. Now, could he come in and dink and dunk? Yeah, of course he could. You know, that's not really Sark's style, but yeah, he could do that. Matthew Caldwell could come in and operate the whole offense. Now, he's not as physically gifted as Trey Owens. That's quite obvious. But his experience would serve him well. So that's my projection. You know, we'll see. But we might not even see until, you know, we have to, you know, September is not going to give us a true read of what would happen if Arch gets hurt against A&M in the last game and they got to win that game.
For sure. And then running back, number one, Trey Wisner. Number two, C.J. Baxter. Number three, Christian Clark. Four, Jarrett Gibson. James Simon and Ricky Stewart. So we had a question up here. I think it was talking about running backs. I'll try to find it. But the gist was, is this assuming guys are healthy for Baxter and Clark?
We've been covering their health all offseason. It was a huge note to me when we found out Baxter was already participating. We had not anticipated him coming back until August. And so now I'm looking at him entirely differently. Yeah, I still think he's going to be on an early season pitch count because Sark is playing the long game. Sark will straight up tell you in every press availability that he has that it's a long, long season. I think Baxter's going to be brought along relatively slowly. But, you know, I don't know, man. If he gets a couple carries against Ohio State and gets a hot hand, he might make that look foolish. But we know that Sark has a soft spot for those top two. Not that he plays favorites, but Trey Wisner is, you know, the vocal leadership of the team. He's the energizer bunny. He's going to be made better by having help behind him. He had no help at the end of last year. I know there's a lot of Jaden Blue stands out there on YouTube. Jaden didn't really provide much help as far as running back volume share. This year he's going to have a lot more help. Baxter, Christian Clark is the most dynamic running back they have on the roster. Yes, Jarrett Gibson's ready. Jarrett Gibson can be a volume back. So I think this platoon is going to make each one of them stronger. Just like we see with like the amount of bodies that they use at defensive tackle, I think you're going to see the same thing with running backs. And, you know, Trey is bigger and faster, and he's not going to be as beat up. Ideally, he's not going to be as beat up as he was last year.
Yeah, he's also a year older too, you know. So there's also the natural progression of Trey Wisner. And then Baxter was a leader on the team from day one and a leader through injury. It's hard to be a vocal leader in your room when you're sitting out. He was able to do that. So, and Baxter, of course, has the NFL measurables, right? That's a big back. Yeah. The NFL likes that style of back. Christian Clark, Eric said, the most dynamic. I agree with that. When I think it's all said and done, I think Clark's going to be super productive. Yes, and then Jarrett Gibson, it's tricky, man. When I watch his tape, I like what I see. Like, he falls forward for like 4 or 5 yards, you know? It's just, can you pass block, dude? Like, that's a huge part. And the NFL wants to know that, too.
His spring was overshadowed by Wisner and Clark's return. But I remember Sark at Touchdown Club said, don't forget about Jarrett Gibson. They still have big plans for him. That first four, I think, are going to play a lot. Probably, I don't know, man. Christian Clark, it could take one game. Christian Clark blows
same,
up.
I agree.
But C.J. Baxter, if they run gap schemes as much as we think, that's going to be the train on the tracks coming downhill. And I think he's going to be, you know, he's going to be productive. But again, Sark is going to want to play the long game here. Somebody's going to squeak their way to 1,000 yards. But
no matter what.
Last play of the season, maybe. But they're going to, it's just a much, much, much better room than it was last year, even if they don't have that single guy that you can point to. Hey, he's a Heisman candidate.
Yeah. And Gibson, remember, kind of going into spring, he kind of got circled by sources is like, hey, that's the guy we want to promote, and we think that's the guy. For whatever reason, it didn't occur, but it lets you know that sources, you know, like what they see. And you do whenever you watch it on tape. There's little pieces missing, but as far as running forward, I thought he was the best at that we had. And then, hey guys,
good downhill runner. He did look to bounce a little bit too much for the coach's liking, but that's, you hear that about almost every single young running back. Yeah. But yeah, you know, you got to knock Trey out to take his spot. He's not going to give it up. And then, you know, Baxter was going to start ahead of Jonathan Brooks, which was a total shocker to us. I don't know what Sark was thinking on that one.
But yeah, that was wild.
That just tells you that Sark has a soft spot for Baxter. And I don't know, but don't rule out Christian Clark. I'm excited to see Clark as much as anybody.
Yeah, Clark's my favorite back in the room, hands down, so I hope we see him. Hey, guys, aren't we going to run more gap schemes this year? Yes, that is the plan. And if with Baxter, that's a good plan. If you watch his high school huddle, there wasn't a lot of zone. It was Baxter needed to follow his lead blocker and get to work. So it's also a match for what Baxter was used to running in Florida. Correct. Gap scheme will Baxter running as well. You guys are pretty good today, man. Good stuff. All right, guys. I think we got, that's everything here on the offensive side. We're going to hit defense next. But first, let's hear a word from Andre the Lawyer.
This video is brought to you by Andre the Lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the Lawyer to fight for you. Principal office is in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the Lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is in the description.
Here we go. We're unveiling the defense here, guys. Drum roll.
Yeah, here we go.
Here we go. Starting defense here. Shout out Will for another graphic. And all the little tweaks I made him do every time he would send it to me. He's a trooper, man. I was like, put the star to the field because generally there's the star's going to be to the all this schemey stuff that he was like, all right.
No, that's good. I'm glad you did that. That's right. It should lay out how they do on the field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like it was kind of tricky. All right. So let's start at defensive line, and then we'll kind of talk how this will work, and then as well as the defensive end and base type of stuff. We'll discuss that. So Jack Edge, we'll start with Jack Edge. This is going to be generally your strong side edge, often to the field, if the strength's to the field, a bigger player. So you're going to want a bigger edge there that can set the run. Sometimes he's going to have to deal with a tight end and a tackle. Just think bigger edge. Ethan Burke, we have right there. Watching him back too, man. Whenever he gets in his 4-point, he looks like a he looks like his legs are at the linebackers.
Dude. Yeah.
You know, it looks absurd. I don't even know how someone that big can comfortably get down like that, but he looks like a panther. So Ethan Burke there, man, and talk about a player that just kind of – he would just show up in games, right? I think about the A&M stuff, that kind of stuff. So Ethan Burke. And then we'll talk about Trey Moore because Trey Moore is basically weapon X this defense that can move to a bunch of spots. So don't religiously believe that Trey Moore is that jack behind Burke. That's not really kind of how it works. We're going to explain it. We just have to make this as clear as possible. So Burke at the jack edge, Trey Moore, if you want to get Simmons and Moore on the field at the same time, which Eric reported the coaches do want to do that. I agree. Vasek, who everyone's been waiting on. I don't know. From top Texas analysts to just your average Twitter fan, across the board, everyone wants to see Vasek. I've never seen such peace and harmony about a player in the fan base. And then, of course, the greatest player of all time, future Hall of Famer, Lance Jackson. It's my Townsend. So I love Lance Jackson. I don't know how much we'll see this year. He could do some cool stuff, but I think the future is super bright for him. So let's talk about Jack, starting with Ethan Burke.
Yeah, the coaches wouldn't have it like this, but I don't know where they'd have Trey Moore. So I put Trey Moore there because I'm trying to keep this as functional for the fans as possible because I do think he's going to play Jack quite a bit in their various packages. That's why he came back. You know, he didn't want to come back and be overshadowed by Colin Simmons. Not overshadowed like, you know, because he's jealous, but he wants to play, right?
Yeah, trying to go to the NFL.
Right, exactly. And so the coaches might still have him at linebacker, but it's weird to have a linebacker that you know is also going to play the jack side edge. I've just put him over there. But Ethan Burke is your standard down starter, obviously. And his high school teammate, Colton Vosick, right behind him. Colton Vosick has more upside than Burke, which is exciting because Burke has proven himself to be a solid player.
Yeah,
I think Burke is going to be more productive than he was last year. You know, I think splitting time with Barron and playing at that new side was different for him. But he's got a lot of tools to work with. And then we all expect a breakout for Vosick. He's the healthiest he's been on campus. Outside of Colin Simmons, I don't know. I don't want to say that Vosick has more upside than Lance Jackson. It's a little too early. I don't know about that.
Don't you dare, dude.
But as outside of Colin Simmons, I don't know. Vosick might be the baddest dude. He's got the edge that Colin plays with. He's also a good athlete. And he has that NFL body that everybody's looking at that, you know, maybe Ethan Hurt doesn't quite have.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to be interesting. And then Trey Moore too, man. If you put him at Jack, I loved Trey's ability in the run game, man. He was always in the right spot. He was turning stuff back. I mean, he was fundamentally sound. So even if you do, even though, you know, he's more of a weak side pass rusher with his skill set, he can do everything against the run, and he's responsible too. And so he'll be in the right spot. So really, wherever you put Trey Moore, the second half of the season, I just became rewatching everything. Over. Yeah, he just took over, man, and he was doing everything well. And so I think he's probably the most like sound overall. Mm-hmm. And Colin Simmons does whatever. Colin Simmons is a superhero, but not always fundamentally sound because he breaks the laws of physics. But Trey Moore is sound.
Trey Moore always keeps his outside shoulder free. He doesn't get too far up the field. Like you said, he's a really good face up defender where he locates the ball carrier well. He's a really good player. I'm excited to see what they do with him. I do hope that he gets some traditional running linebacker reps too, because I want that on NFL tape for him. He's just a pure football player.
Yeah. All right, and then Lance Jackson.
I want to see September call Lance Jackson month. You know,
Post Ohio State, man. Whenever you let the young guys in, let's see what's up with Lance Jackson versus Sam Houston State. Yep. Okay.
September, Lance Jackson and Nick Townsend month.
For sure. Nose tackle, right? So when we say so Texas doesn't always do this, but when you think about it, think of a one technique. What do we mean by one technique? Between the center and the guard, your biggest guy, right? Like your 360-pound traditional, hard to move in the run game. You can double team him, but he doesn't care. That kind of thing. The anchor is what we think of kind of in a nose tackle. Ian will quickly correct me and be like, well, technically we move our guy, but just that's what we're thinking of. We're thinking of the big anchor, hard to move body type right here. And so first things first, we have Cole Brevard transfer, Travis Shaw transfer. Mm-hmm. Johnson down here. Sorry, it's a little small. Transfer. And then Sharma, the California kid, who's huge, man. When they showed that like workout picture of him, ball of muscle for being that big. Future's bright at the bottom of this roster too, but a lot of the transfer guys holding down the nose spot right now.
Yeah, it's hard to know exactly what to call them because sometimes they play the big space heater at the three tech. Kevondre Sweat played that because he's occupying a bigger part of the field. So they'll switch him up. But I kept this for traditional. This is how fans are going to read it anyway. So Brevard, we talked about him on Friday being a Torrey Becton favorite, very hard worker. A lot of us that watched his Purdue tape are pretty excited about him, probably a lot more than anybody that just went to Purdue. This is not like getting the kid out of Minnesota a couple years ago. I'm drawing a blank on him. He's an entirely different player.
He went to Auburn. Yeah, Trey Carter. Trill Carter. Trill Carter.
This is not Trill Carter. Brevard's got pretty long arms, bigger kid. I think he's going to be pretty good. I think he could be like honorable mention SEC. This season, maybe even more. I think he's a good player. And then Travis Shaw, more upside behind him. I like those guys coming in one after another.
So do I. Yeah.
You don't have to pair them together. See, I was a little worried after the spring where I thought, oh, they might have to pair them. And then you're kind of worried about the depth and not having one of those veterans out there. But not having to pair them, I think, is a massive win. Because then they're both, we'll see in a minute, they're both being paired with guys that are more athletically gifted than they are. So we're seeing some, if it comes out like this, obviously they're looking for the best compliments. They want guys that compliment each other. And so they're able to do that because of the strength of the portal. And then LaVon Johnson, guy does the dirty work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Best
player, leadership intangibles, going to come in and be a tough guy. And then behind him, Josiah Sharma, he's only there because he's a true freshman, has more talent than anybody above him, except for, well, I don't know. He's probably got more talent than Travis Shaw when you factor in whether or not they're going to maximize.
Yeah. And Shaw was dealing with a little bit of a lingering knee thing. So that's the cool part. And he was a big guy, but that's the cool part. What Eric's saying is like, Cole Brevard, give me 30 snaps of you acting like a psycho, and then I'll give Shaw 30 snaps. And we've seen this model work consistently with Texas. Texas has a couple of things they do repeatedly. And they do it with a nickel, like move nickel to corner. They have like a pipeline they do there, and then they do the same thing with defensive tackles. And the model has worked tremendously. So, yeah, you don't want gassing these guys out, but when you're on the field, go 100%. And then, you know, we've shown that you'll go to the NFL if you do that.
Yeah, I think you can be deeper than last year. Shaw can play that, what, Bill Norton role, fourth and short, goal line, just destroy people, eat up blocks.
It's going to be as deep as 2022. I remember listening to Mike Gundy. He's sitting there going, all six of these defensive tackles they play are going to the NFL. He's like, I'm in a place where you're lucky if you have three you can even play and feel good about. Yeah. They had six going to the NFL. Yeah. And then there's the positive returns. Everybody's duty cycle is 100%. You know, they're able to go all out. And that matters so much, especially going up against an offensive line that, you know, the offensive line doesn't rotate. Those guys are out there for whether it's 60, 70, 80 snaps. So you can keep these guys fresh. They're more athletic than the offensive linemen they're going up against. It's just a massive advantage. And this is the number one factor, the ability to rotate these big guys, of why Texas tends to wear teams down in the fourth quarter.
Sure. And then we have defensive tackle. For traditional purposes, that would be your three technique. What do we mean by that? It's between your guard and your tackle. They're generally known as a penetrator. They can do some stuff with the pass rush. If you pair them on the side of a rushing edge, then you can get one-on-ones, that kind of stuff. Texas doesn't always play it that way, but just, you know, for old time's sake, that's what we mean by defensive tackle. We get the Syracuse transfer with years of eligibility, and he was an all-conference player or something, right? Or freshman of the year, or some type of
24/7 has him as a freshman All-American.
Okay, cool. So yeah, some honors there. So we have Murad Watson to start. I know people are really excited for him. Right behind him, Alex January, who people are also excited for. We were arguing kind of all spring of where January is going to fit out. And then Hero Canoe, the German, is at the third spot. And you'll see here when we talk about base that he has some flow there. He's from Ohio State. Melvin Hills, Myron Charles, Myron Charles, younger guy. Hills is not as young as them, but that's defensive tackle. And as Eric said, paired with a big nose tackle, these guys at the top are more athletic than them.
Charlie can have Murad because he's the Murad guy. I'm the Alex January guy.
Yeah, look, I love Murad. Like, you don't play as a freshman for the guys you play for at Syracuse, right? I think he's still young, has a lot of room to grow, but, man, his ceiling's very high. I call him a three-and-out player, man. I think he has that type of ability. You give him some one-on-one pass rush or even against in the run game versus a tackle or guard, he's going to completely destroy him, man. If the light bulb comes on, he's more consistent. And now, like I said, he was a freshman last year and still got honors for being a freshman All-American. But if the light bulb comes on all the way, man, I think he can be special and be out of here. I mean, he has the size that NFL covers. Like, he's just a rare blend of defensive tackle, man. He's like the new age guy, the 6'4". Big guys who can move. Maybe Justice Terry would be next, but still, I like Murad Watson a lot.
Yeah, Alex January is going to be good too. Alex January, I was told Alex January was probably the best defensive tackle in the spring, and that controls for Brevard and Shaw and Canoe. You know, the thing with January is he's still getting his strength up. He needs to become just a little bit more physical. He's still learning that side of it. But as far as movement skills and size, he's got it all. I don't know if he's going to have a true breakout season this year. I think it's going to happen sort of like how we saw in the 22, 23, 24. Yeah, it's going to come in waves. I don't know that this is the breakout for him, but he is going to break out. And I don't know, he might be a three-year player too, the way they're talking about him. Probably a four-year player, but he's got a lot of upside. He's got more upside than I think a lot of people realize, especially when he came out of high school. I was shooting guns in the air like Yosemite Sam when they got him. Because D tackles are just hard to find. And you like them when they're in state and your dad played there too. January's coming along and, you know, January has a chance to start. Yeah. That's a competition between him and Murad Watson.
Afro Collins did say January was the next guy up though. So still, it says a lot.
Yeah. And my sourcing is a little split on who they think is going to go between Murad Watson and January. I went with Murad just because I think he is just a little bit more physical. But you know, January might have more upside.
And he has a psychological edge. He can bait people into punching him into the face and and draw flags. So the psychological warfare edge goes to January right now. Here Canoe. This was a player that kind of when me and Ian and Paul were thinking, we didn't expect much here, frankly. And that's changed from Eric's reporting. This is, I mean, his reporting either this last Friday or two Fridays ago, we've been getting a lot of good stuff, was that, man, these defensive tackles are all showing up. And that's huge to hear. So we'll talk about, let's talk about Canoe, and then we'll talk about the young guys, and we'll kind of go to this defensive end concept. But yeah, what are you hearing on him?
Seems like we hear about a different D tackle every week. And the last 2 weeks we hear about Hero Canoe. And that's the power of competition, bringing out the best in everybody. 1 week it's one guy, 1 week it's another. But we've been hearing more about Canoe lately. He's another one of Tory Becton's favorites in the weight room. You know, that tells you a lot, right? Hard worker, and he's a brand new guy too, taking on the leadership in that room. They lost some longstanding Longhorns in the room last year. I'm not even ruling out that guy starting, even to get, you know, Ohio State. That would be kind of poetic, right? The team just left. I don't think he's quite as athletically gifted as the two I have listed ahead of him. And that's kind of why I have him there. But he does a lot of things right. He's experienced. He's more experienced than the two guys ahead of him. Knows Ohio State schemes pretty well. That might give him an added advantage. He's like, hey, I saw this in practice a lot.
He's gonna be hanging out with the coaches.
Scouting report.
What are their stunts? What are they like on third down? Yeah,
and he can do the dirty work too. So I think he's one of the guys that can play either one of those tackle spots too.
Coach, what is the value if you get a player from a competitor? Are the coaches like, hey, what are the stunts? Hey, what are, like, are you trying to get every bit of information from?
You ask everything. I want to know every detail about the players too, not just the scheme. What ticks this guy off? What makes him mad? What can he not do so well? Like, it's gonna all be noticed. Every player, every coach knows it. It's gonna be in the full scouting report, man. So you want everything you can get. I'm sorry, like, it's an advantage. Take advantage of it and use it.
Yeah. Oh, to me, it's like, man, I'm always taking a ninth string transfer from A&M and OU every year because I would like to know how the defenses work. All right, Melvin Hills and Myron Charles at the bottom here, Eric.
You know, Melvin was always going to be like a longer curve guy. Melvin reminds me of the guys that, Tom Herman would get, that, you know, you kind of incubate in the program for as long as possible, strength and conditioning, build them up. Melvin started making a little bit of noise in spring ball. So, you know, I've kind of just put him on the back burner. Haven't talked about him a whole lot, but, you know, he's got a chance. If he would be a guy that they would get out of the portal, probably, you know, that sort of guy, like a LaVon Johnson. I could see Melvin Hills becoming that sort of guy. And then Myron Charles, I just have him there because he's a true freshman. Tons of upside, very athletic. Probably more athletic than anybody I have ahead of him.
Yeah, and yeah, I appreciate that too about Hills. Because didn't he come under Bo? I can't remember. Didn't he come under Bo and then Bo left too or something like that? But anyways, sticking it out has been a cool trait there. All right, we're going to talk the defensive end. Okay, so when we say base, even though really everyone bases out a nickel nowadays, technically when they install, most coaches are still going to start with their base, like a 3-4. Mm-hmm. And so that means that you're going to need a bigger defensive end. And they're going to end up having more of a kind of tackle body. Texas has a ton of flexibility here, though, that it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. But for the sake, like we said, for making it simple, in a 3-4 system, we have Canoe, which is interesting, and then also Justice Terry as well. It may be a good way. If you want to bring a talented freshman along, you could try to lump them into a sub package. And that way they have a very limited role. You give them the ability to use their athleticism, but they're not having to mentally process everything. Think about like Anthony Hill, like day one, it was like, hey, you can blitz. And then you expand their powers. So this is a good way to integrate Justice Terry as well. So what's going on at that kind of 3-4 defensive end spot?
Yeah, I mean, you said it on Terry. That's the way to bring them along. You know, you make them earn it. You let them see, you make them earn more snaps. So with Anthony Hill, that's, you know, we said they're going to bring him on as an edge player basically, and if he does well there, they're going to move him to linebacker. And obviously he expedited that learning curve very quickly. Same thing with Colin Simmons, you know, get him out there, get his feet wet, and see if he earns it more. Of course he did. Now that's Justice Terry's chance to do that. This is the way to do it for him, because he's not, there's no edge you're going to play him over, and there's no D tackle you're going to play him over, because he's still putting on weight. So this is the way to do it. Get him involved. I think he's going to play. I think this is what he's going to play. But like you said, when they work base on the first day of fall camp, that's probably the most confused these guys are. They're like, we're never in base. What is this? You know? I put Hiro Kanu there because he kind of has the levers for that position. He's got good length. He's almost like a jumbo defensive end. Like if he went to the NFL right now, they might see him as a 3-4 defensive end. That's why I stuck him there. It just makes the most sense to me. But Ian sent me a text. He said, you know, Merod Watson has played that role. So that might be a way to get Merod Watson out there and Alex January. Yeah. So Ian with a good point there. I have to bring up.
Cool. All right. So then now we're getting rid of the concept of a 3-4 and we're going back to what fans are used to, the 4-2-5, right? Four defensive linemen, two linebackers, five DBs. And then of course we have at Buck Edge, Colin Simmons, who Sark has basically said, you know, this guy needs to be on the field every snap. And I'm going to say I agree with him. After a while, man, he's just so freaky out there, dude. And he's almost psychic. Like, I don't know how he times the snap that well. And he doesn't jump either, you know, because I would expect, I was like, man, I'm going to false clap every down with him. No, man. And then crazy motor, like we said, 5-star athleticism, all of that stuff. But really, a walk-on level effort he provides. Like, if the run gets past them, he's tackling dudes from behind in the secondary. Like, he's just special mixed with a really good mindset. So there's not much to say about Colin Simmons. He's awesome. We're super excited. But behind him, Zena, brother of Neto, is coming along. He's added some size. Those brothers are maturing in the program.
Yeah, Neto's actually big for Buck. He's pretty much in the jack range. Quick first step, very quick first step. Second quickest first step behind Colin of all the edges. So, cool. And natural pass rusher. Yeah, that quick first step with his length, he can get back there pretty quick. Zena is going to be a player at Texas. I feel very confident about that. And then who do I have? Oh, Smith Rugbo. Smith Rugbo was the perfect pick for that class because you don't expect anything out of him. You really don't want a stud out there that costs a lot and is antsy and you feel like you have to play.
Correct.
So you're just going to lose him. So Smith Rugbo, a guy that's on a longer curve but has lots of upside. Quick, cat quick, very mobile, good feet, very, you know, uses his arm length. Now it's just about, hey, man, you got to put on some college size. You know, he's got to get up to 240 pounds. Sort of like taking Joseph Osai, although Joseph Osai had Colin Simmons' mindset. That's why Joe was a competitive guy. But Colin is what you call high football character. That guy's trying to change his family's life, his kids' family's life, his grandkids' family's life, and football is the way to do that. He gets after it every single play.
And just watch his depth of character with his brother and all. Yeah. Just like Colin Simmons, man, is special on and off the field. But man, he's real special on the field. And then we talked about the depth here. It's hard. It's not hard to see why some elite recruits might be scared of this Texas team depth chart and talent. Yeah, there's a factor here. Like if you're one of those high school players that, you know, you got your rank and you think you should start day one, it's going to be tricky with a lot of these lineups here. So it is going to be interesting in the recruiting world. Whenever you have top guy and then you're the next year, it seems like you kind of have to have a cool off year and then you got to kind of stagger this effectively. And also, like Eric said, you don't want to burn all this money on the bench when you know Colin Simmons got two more years. So Texas is having the problems of success, you know, like when you have this much retention and stuff like that, you're really having to do unique roster management and pass up on good players or good players pass up on you because of who you have ahead of them. It's a new world of recruiting. This is much more NFL-y, except you can't actually sign them to a contract and make them stay.
Yeah. But the good thing is Sark rotates so much that if you're ready, he's going to play you. If he trusts you, you're going to play. So it's not like you're just sitting there, you know, collecting dust. You know, he's going to play you, and that's your proving ground. And they're going to see it. If I become a starter at Texas, not only is NIL going to be lucrative, but I'm going to get drafted too. Who was the last multi-year starter that didn't get drafted? I mean, so you had Jake Majors.
Multi-year. I don't
know. Yeah.
Hell, yeah. Even single-year starters.
So that's what I'm saying. Just go – you know, it's almost like, yeah, you become your – you're forcing yourself on NFL draft boards if you start at Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Tex Homer, do you agree it's best to run our defense with a one high safety look? Because other than Florida, the SEC teams don't throw the ball as much as the Big 12. So we do face a lot of 12 person. I've been thinking about this a lot because I think you keep saying something about that we're going to play a lot more one high. So, yeah, if teams are reacting to the two high that most people are doing, they're going to run more. Also, the SEC is running more. You're seeing more 21 personnel, 12 personnel, that kind of stuff. That would let you want to go to a one high look more. You'd still start off with two safeties up high. They would just what we call rotate. So I think that's going to be more valid. Now, of course, that's going to leave you, if you're not playing cover three, you're playing true cover one. Right. They have tight ends that can go out and catch, which a lot of them do. Then you risk yourself, you know, to some explosives. We know Akina's really aggressive. He wants to play man. We have good athletes, so maybe you could try it. But, you know, fans have been asking for man. You're going to get it, all of its upsides and all of its downsides if we don't play some cover three. But we're going to play a lot of match cover three. But to answer your question, yes, I expect more one high, both from Eric's sourcing, but also kind of how football is being played. It's going a little bit away from the spread now.
Yeah, coaches were actually a little frustrated with run defense last year. You know, you can't compare it to the year before where you had Byron and Tavondre controlling offensive lines. But they were, you know, they actually played the run pretty well last year, but they want to get better. And playing single high back there is a way to get more help in the run game.
This is the only thing I worry about. So offensive coordinators in the NFL, our defensive coordinators do not care about the run. If you get 4 yards, they're like, great. Now you're in a second and six passing situation. Wonderful. So we still, I mean, they talk about high school coaches. If you get a 4 yard run, they think their world is ending. It's a mindset difference. The NFL does not care about it for a reason, right? Yeah. So you have to be careful what we're incentivizing. 2 years ago, we shut down the run, and our secondary wasn't that good at coverage, so we just incentivized explosive plays on us, which was not smart. This year, I liked that we gave up 4, put them in passing situations, locked them down, and then situationally, when we had to stop the run, we did.
We did, yeah.
So I don't really subscribe necessarily that you just have to stop the run as long as you're good situationally. So as long as we can cover, man, go ahead, shut down the run, but don't incentivize them to take a more efficient yard generator in passing if you don't have elite coverage. That's always my fear whenever we hear, like, we just got to stop the run. Why? Because it makes me mad when they run. So that's what we got to kind of figure out. Okay, going forward here, let's talk linebackers. Anthony Hill at the mic, playing to the field. Film guy did a good piece the other day. It was actually breaking down Cade Klubnik. But Hill was able to drop, get depth, identify the end breaker, get there, run that play. So remember, the question about Hill was like, how's he going to do in coverage? That's changing. So we got a pass rusher, generally will fit his gap, and then good in space. The NFL are going to love him. He's just special. And his closing speed every time, how quick he can get to the flats, or how it just blows my mind how fast he is moving forward. Anthony Hill is going to be a baller, first-round pick. NFL is going to love him. More interesting.
He's doing good in 7-on-7 in coverage, too, which is, like you said, was kind of like you have to nitpick these guys, right, because, you know, you can't just call them perfect football players. That's kind of been his question. He's doing good in 7-on-7. It's been a concern. He's made a concerted effort to get better at that and remove that question in anticipation of the NFL.
Cool. And then behind him, Brad Spence, Arkansas. He was doing some awesome pass rushing on other teams. He'd be a starter. And then Texas is also finding ways to get Spence involved, putting him at the edge and all that stuff, which means the coaches like his skill set. So you'll see Brad Spence in some interesting non-traditional linebackery spots, more of like a 3-4 linebacker at times. So that's interesting with him. And then Elijah Bo Barnes, I know Coach can talk about him, but first Eric can hit Brad Spence.
Yeah, I guess we probably should have thrown Sam in here if we put defensive end, right?
True.
Yeah, so Brad Spence, I think Brad Spence is working at Sam. Is that right, or is it Trey Moore? I got to look at they don't run it as much, so I don't ask that question. You're not going to hear about it as much during this year, this part of the year where they're doing 7-on-7 stuff. But Brad Spence could play Sam linebacker, obviously. He's worked at edge right now. I think the coaches like to cross-train. You never know when you're going to have to fill in for an injury. But also part of what they're doing is just playing to these players' strengths. Brad Spence is a very good pass rusher, as Homer notes. And he's proven to have pretty good linebacker skills too. Now, he might be a year away from becoming a really good off-ball linebacker, but that's fine because you have Anthony Hill. Spence seems like the logical successor to Hill at this point.
Yeah. All right. Bo Barnes, man.
Man, look, Barnes is bought in, man. Look, he's trying to shadow Anthony Hill everywhere he goes. We had a note this past Friday. He hit close to 22 miles per hour at 238 pounds, man, which is ridiculous. But another coach, Becton in favor, he's putting in the work this offseason, man. He's really trying to earn his stripes, you know, as a young freshman coming in. So I think his work ethic is going to prove that he is the player that everybody thought he was coming out of high school. He puts it all together, man. I think he has a chance to be special and be right behind Brad Spence.
Yeah, he's a freight train.
Sure. And then across all the platforms, we have 3,300 viewers right now. So if you're on YouTube, make sure to like, subscribe, Twitter, retweet, all of that, Facebook, like it, whatever goes on Facebook. I haven't been on Facebook in 10 years, but I'm sure it's going well over there. Whatever you have to do to promote it on there, do it on Facebook as well. Thank you guys for watching.
Listen, that explains why you haven't answered my friend notification.
Dude, I had it just because sometimes you need it to look at a post.
I'm just kidding. I check it every once in a while to see what friend notifications I have that came from the past or something. But yeah, not often. Make sure to go inside Texas. We have a dollar promotion right now until the Ohio State game. So you sign up right now, cost you a dollar. You're gonna have all the August practice reports. We're gonna have this depth chart almost dialed into exactly what you'll see on the field.
Yeah. And then we have the weak side linebacker. So often playing to the boundary. Sometimes he has to do some handling guys to the flats. Sometimes he has to climb the hook and some pass game stuff. So we have Leongo LaFau there. He was fun to watch too. I was paying more attention to him. Fans are hard on him, man. I don't know what it is, but he's one of the ones the fans are hard on. And it's like, man, watch the tape, dude.
Yeah. If you missed a couple obvious plays, which he did, he overran it. Then the narrative begins, and it's almost impossible to ever get back. It's quite silly.
Taff's the only one that I've seen really turn that on a dime, dude. Everyone wanted to bench Taff, you know.
Leonga's really good in coverage. Actually, you know, you can almost talk about Ty Anthony and Leonga in the same exact way. They're both tough, they're both hard workers, they're both very good in coverage, and they're both still learning off the ball, but they have great feel for the game. They're both just natural linebackers. They understand all the different things you have to do. Mirror tempo in the run game. Obviously, yes, Leonga overran a guy or two. He's aggressive. He's a freaking Hawaiian. Of course, he's going to be aggressive and overrun the plays. That's part and parcel with it. And Ty Anthony, East Texas guy, he's going to do the same thing. Both physical, aggressive, but really complete linebackers. Not complete yet, but on their way to becoming complete. Both those guys are going to get drafted. You know, Ty Anthony's got a chance to even be a superstar. I think Leonga's going to be a very good college football player.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk safety. Top left, we're going to talk Michael Taff. We're going to go ahead and give Michael Taff the start here. leader of the defense, guys. Yeah. Smart in the right places. Willing to come down and hit. Body doesn't always want to do it as much, but he's right there every single time. He just does the right things. Then we have Jordan Johnson Rubel backing him up. And then Zealous Hicks, the young player out of Georgia, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So let's talk about that safety spot first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Taff is pretty much a known. Well, it was a big year for him last year. There's a lot of people that are on to the next narrative. Like you said, leader of the defense. I think that, you know, everybody focuses on Julian Sand struggling with the pass rush in his first start against Ohio State. Michael Taff is going to be back there messing with his head nonstop. Michael Taff is going to give him as much fits as anybody else on that defense just by how he's aligning and where he's going to end up post-snap. Really, really good. We talk so much about how smart he is. Yeah, whatever. He's a good athlete too. Good athlete. A little bit bigger now. That's kind of been my concern about him. NFL readiness is just running the alley against those full-grown men at running back. But very good player. Leader of the defense, obvious, well-known guy. Jordan Johnson Rubel, I like seeing him down at 190 pounds because he's already a big hitter. Now it's about being as fast and mobile in coverage. Also has the ability to play star, but I don't think they'll need him there this year. Yeah. And then Zealous Hicks coming in, impressing people, ask smart questions. He's a sponge. And then he's got kind of that prototypical size that they're looking for. You know, he's almost 6'2". He's a bigger kid. He's a reclassification guy, stash and storm. Maybe he'll bite on special teams or something this year, but expectations shouldn't be high for him now. But, down the road's a whole different story. Safety's going to look a lot different over the next year or two.
Oh, yeah.
Opposite safety, Derek Williams on fire, man. Watching that OU game, he was everywhere, man. And his range is incredible. So if we do a lot of single high and he does end up in the high post, he can reach wherever he needs to horizontally. He can go back, but also he can come down in the run game. Derek Williams, I remember how excited we were when we got him in recruiting. So for him to come back from injury after playing so well early last season, I think it's going to be a huge addition. He's also another year smarter. So that's awesome. Phil Samee got some speed on him. Man, when he came in, no clue what was going on. That seems to have changed as well. Safety, you gotta know a lot. You're the last line of defense. And then Jonah Williams, baby. Eric, we got to find some way. Maybe put 12 guys on the field. See if Jonah can be out that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But that's going to be the trick with Jonah Williams as well. And remember, younger players, Sark, generally, you're going to be at the bottom of the depth chart. that you're going to have to earn it if you want to go up. So we know Jonah Williams is special. We just have to see how that shakes out. But kind of what's the intel on Derek Williams coming back from that injury?
Yeah, he looks good. Obviously he had some rust to knock off. He's done that each week. He looks a little bit better. I do think Derek will be ready. He's looking good in 7-on-7. Now, I wasn't told that he's going to start, but I think that's what all the hints are pointing towards, the way he's performing in 7-on-7. Covers so much territory, physical too, just – got a ton of range. He could be the guy that runs the alley as well. I mean, he can do it all at safety. They're just mixing and matching what he does well and what Taft does well. Really, Derek can do anything. Jonah Williams, how are they going to get him on the field? I think we're going to hear more about that in August when they start actually building out Dime. They're not messing with Dime right now. And then who we have, Phil Samee. Yeah, he's starting to communicate. He's starting to talk back there. And once that happens, they're going to start. They're more comfortable. You know, they're actually going to start playing faster and thinking less. And when a guy like him plays fast, it is really fast. He's the fastest defensive back, probably. That might even include corners.
Cool.
Whew. That's like the freaky side of safety, of all the DB, that side over there. Like freakish athletes, man.
Can you imagine Jonah playing center field in that Derek Williams role?
I mean, he can literally play center field.
Yeah. Right,
he
can literally play center field.
Yeah, he might actually play center field for us this upcoming year. So
So you can kind of see that you got your heady guys over on the left, but also good athletes. Jordan Johnson Rebell's running, 21.8, something like 20.7, something like that. He's plenty fast. Zealous Hicks is a good athlete. I compared him to Lewis Seen, the Georgia safety that took over one of those national championship games. The way he plays, he comes downhill and knifes. But he's a stash and store guy right now, reclassification. But yeah, you got freaks on the other side with those three.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. And with Phil Samee, man, when you have that speed, but you don't know what you're doing, you're just gonna make a fast mistake. So now but looks like he's learning more, right? So now you can use that speed. The speed can hurt you if you don't know what you're doing. You're on the wrong side of the field before you know it. But
like Tyler Owens, waiting on Tyler Owens' light bulb to come on. He was another.
I'm still waiting, dude. I'm still waiting.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was he was fast going the wrong way.
Yeah, man. All right, and then let's get to our corners. We'll start at field, and then we'll talk nickel, and then we'll go to boundary because boundary's interesting right now. All right, so field, Manny Muhammad, not a shocker there, right? Early-ish round, I don't know, second, third type of projection probably right now. We'll see. Behind him, Roberson, who's a player that also people are excited for. His special teams – gumption wasn't great always, but hey, you can't say he wasn't physical. And then Santana Wilson, this is a player that I'm really excited for. I think he's like got that traditional corner build, and then the family lineage. And then Caleb Chester, who I think Eric mentioned two Fridays ago or last Friday on the young guys being mentioned. So what's the latest on field corner right now? They're gonna play force to the field, but a lot more trips to their side. That kind of stuff when you think field corner.
Yeah, I mean, contract year for Manny. He's going to be gone after this year most likely. Warren Roberson is very, very athletic, very physical, has it all. Now, is it going to come together or is it Keaton Crawford? We're not sure yet. Right now, I mean, reports are positive, but I need to hear him in more run-pass conflict to see where his head's at when the pads come on. But he's got a chance to start after Muhammad departs. He's got a chance to play a good amount this year. Yeah, he made some special teams mistakes. He'll learn from those. He also didn't practice towards the last month, part of the month. They just sent him out there. He was hurt. So you got to give him a little love for that. But he's a junkyard dog. That's twitched up athlete. That's really the battle. Like, is he going to be the number four or number three cornerback? Because if you're the number three cornerback, you're going to play a lot. Number four, you're not going to play nearly as much.
Yeah.
Santana Wilson, traditional lead corner, field corner build. Still on the smaller side. He's you know, in the 170s, but he's a good player. He's got to get bigger and just needs more time under tension. That's all there is to it. He's talented. He belongs at Texas. Just needs more time. Caleb Chester, bigger kid, comes in, does all the right things. True freshman, stash in store. If he does anything this year, it'll be on special teams.
So then we have the nickel, which is the star position known as the fifth DB. That was Barron's position before he went to corner, and it was Gilbo's position last year before he went into a corner battle that we'll talk about in a second. But what's interesting here is Gilbo and Barron were corners, body types. This is more of a safety body type, even though Jelani has freaky athleticism. And there was even talks like, could he be corner? But if we're being strict here, this is more of a safety body type, which is interesting if you're going kind of single high, like we said. So Jelani McDonald, another player that everyone's unanimously excited about and only hear positive about, freaky athlete, confident kid. I'll always tell the story where he shouted out all the women of the world on the mic that as a senior at like an Under Armour game or something, just all women got a shout out. The kid does not lack confidence, and you get it. He's a special looking athlete. Wardell Mack, another player that's been kind of in the mix. You know, we're trying to see what's going on with him. Grayson Littleton, a freshman that's getting a lot of buzz that we've heard about. Future's bright for Littleton, probably your nickel of the future. And then Jonathan Cunningham at nickel, huh? And so he was kind of an edge, tall, outside linebackery type. So it's interesting. That's another thing where this position is kind of weird on body types. Grayson Littleton, kind of cornery, McDonald, safety-ish. Cunningham more of a like outside linebacker, so this could be like we were talking about matchup specific as well, because I would classify Jelani McDonald as technically a big nickel opposed to just traditional nickel type. So this is an interesting position. You can move guys around based on your matchup.
Yeah, like we've been saying all offseason, they want to get their three stud safeties on the field. That's Taff, that's Derek Williams, and of course it's Jelani McDonald. How do you do that? You take the most versatile guy that you have and you put him at nickel. Even though Williams and Taff, even, you know, Taff first started making noise playing nickel back in the day, years ago. Yeah, I'm with you on the different body types. And we've heard that Akina wants to mix and match almost like the NBA. You see the personnel that you're up against and you go put out your personnel that best matches up. Jonathan Cunningham has been at nickel. He's been at nickel. He was at nickel all spring. It's just you're not going to hear much about him as he transitions. Right. You know, he's got a ways to go. One person put it to me like, it's just like putting Maurice Blackwell at that defensive back. Now he's going to learn valuable coverage techniques that would suit him if he does eventually move to linebacker. Grayson Littleton, I expect him to play a lot on special teams this year. One of the freshmen with the most buzz about him, even in the number one class in the country. And I think I've heard about him, man, almost as much as anybody else, probably as much as anybody else. Him, Dalen McCutcheon, Emery Winston, three guys that we hear about all the damn time. And then Wardell Mack. Wardell Mack's got – he's got all the – he's probably got the best blend of being able to be physical and coverage out of all of them. I don't know. Maybe Jelani has them, but, I mean, we're talking about Wardell Mack as a cover – as a corner moving to nickel rather than a safety. Long arms. Saw him make a really incredible interception last year. Yeah. I think we're going to see Wardell play quite a bit this season. I do think we'll see Jelani at safety some as well. And then who knows what they're going to do in dime. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen there. They've got so many different guys they can play. Like I've been saying all offseason, you're going to see more defensive backs play at Texas this year than you've ever seen before.
Man, there's a part of me too, man, that's like, I hope we have a little bit of a three-high package here. If you could get Taff, Williams, and McDonald back there, man, that's three safeties that would be cool. That'd be a fun look. Grayson Littleton. Go watch his interview that Texas football put out on one of those things. He's a smart kid, man. And you need to be smart at nickel, man. It's basically the tight end of the defense, meaning that you have a ton of responsibilities. You have to be able to cover. You have to be able to stop the run. You have to blitz sometimes. As far as like having to know a piece of all the thing, it's like a tight end there. So nickel intelligence is also important. Cool. All right. And then finally, our boundary cornerback as we go along here, but it's important. We got to cover this depth chart. Boundary cornerback, Eric, right now has Kobe Black starting there. Remember, this is a projection. But Eric just keeps hearing real good things about Kobe Black, so he's putting that to use. And then Jalen Gilboa, of course, probably our third corner if he's not the starter. And then Cade Phillips, a freshman that everybody's really excited for, and a future NFL player. That's what we mean when you look down these depth charts. A lot of NFL players that are like third string right now. So boundary is really interesting. We'll talk through that. And then someone had a question about how Gilboa fits in afterwards, but we'll start with Kobe Black.
Yeah, you know, projecting Gilboa would be the safer thing right now just because he's got experience. You're going up against Ohio State. He knows, you know, he just played Ohio State this past season. He knows the receivers, what they can do, what they can't do. But we're just hearing so much buzz about Black. And like I always talk about, there's that intersection where talent overtakes experience. And I think we're nearing that intersection. At least it seems that way based on how Black is doing in 7-on-7. Again, how you play when you have run-pass conflict and all these other things in real football matters. But there's, you know, there's just a lot of buzz about Black right now. The question, would Gilboa go back to star? You know, I don't think so unless there was an injury because, you know, again, that doesn't help them get their three stud safeties on the field at the same time, which I believe is the goal. We've heard that's the goal. Could he play there? Yeah, he could play there. You know, if they want to give McDonald a rest and play Wardell Mack and Gilbo's better than Mack, then yeah, sure, you could see him there. But I think they want Gilboa. They still want three corners no matter what. They played Gavin Holmes a lot last year. Gavin Holmes played some really good snaps for Texas. I think it went unrecognized at times. They still want three cornerbacks that they trust. And so, you know, I think it's going to end up where Malik Black play the most. And then you've got Gilboa playing that sort of Gavin Holmes role. That's a projection. It could be Black, though.
All right. Y'all should see where On Three Rivals has Jermaine Bishop ranking their new update, 275. He dropped after that camp performance.
Hey, man. Somebody.
Something's up.
Good Lord.
How do you watch that camp performance and be like, I don't know.
Oh, my Lord.
Everyone there was like, uh-oh, this guy's going to be a problem. Hey,
it's got to be a long con that Texas is on to keep the cost down.
Dude, I was going to say, my only thought was like, they're right, Bishop. We can't pay that extra $1 million. But,
man, that's
so off.
I sent On Three the Texas evaluation on Bishop, and it didn't seem to move the needle for him much. But we're going to have to circle that one and come back to it in a couple years. But, yeah, Jermaine Bishop, he's a lot like Jalen Waddle, where you can't really touch him on 7-on-7, so he's going to be even harder to tackle.
Yeah, Jermaine, incredible value here, Texas coaches. Good eval for that three star or whatever they're called. But in better news, Diabella is up to number two and top overall QB.
Oh, they're great, brilliant ranking. All right,
dude, there we go. Shout out On Three and Rivals, man.
I've been calling that one.
I was like, dude, I'm watching Diabella. If this is not the number one quarterback in the country, I don't know what to tell you, man. So that's good. I think they dropped Wesley too. I think Wesley's now a four star or something. I don't know what's going on.
It's because they're not building out their five stars until they get to 32. But he's in five star territory at number 24. Exactly. I don't know, man.
Oh, he's at 24. Okay, we're good.
We have a post up about that one.
the tape is the tape. The ranking ain't going to change that. It's nice to have Twitter, but you know, Dia's doing this work without even using his legs, right? It's not the full game experience. He's doing this as a pure passer, and so that's good.
Is there big state inflation early in rankings, meaning that there's a ton of coverage in California, Texas, and Florida, meaning that there's eyes everywhere, tons of sites, and everyone goes there. So you see the big state guys show up earlier generally, and then as they get to the smaller states, it seems like the big schools end up dropping a little bit over time because they're adding in their Arkansas scout or whatever.
Yeah, there's a massive familiarity bias. Like imagine, you know, Charlie's sitting there in DFW. Of course he's going to know all the DFW guys. You're going to go to all the areas that are traditionally stockpiled. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody's going to Idaho first, and there's even a baller or two in Idaho this year. Yeah, there's a familiarity bias for sure. Florida, Georgia, LSU, you might as well call them LSU, Louisiana, Texas, California, they're all going to be scouted before everybody else.
Yeah. All right. Eric on the hook here. Will Texas finish with a top five class again?
I'm losing reception out here in the woods. What?
That's a shame, Eric. That's a shame. It's been really good. It's been really good the whole game.
I won't shy away from that. So, I mean, we've laid out what's going on in recruiting pretty extensively on Inside Texas. They're not super excited to take a player that's going to sit on the bench if he's going to be expensive.
Right.
We just went over the depth chart. So there's going to be a lot of guys. There's not a ton of room. Look at who they're losing on offense. Who are they guaranteed to lose on offense this year? Cole Hudson and DJ Campbell, right? Matthew Caldwell, the backup quarterback. So three guys, two of them are interior offensive linemen. They're not losing much, right? You're going to lose Jack Andrews probably, but you're not guaranteed to. So there's just not much room. They're not going to pay a lot of money to have guys sitting on the bench. That's just not going to happen. It doesn't make sense. There's not a Texas fan alive that should want them to have the number one class again, because that's just going to be expensive. You're going to have dead capital. You're going to
lose half the guys in the portal.
Yes.
Right. Last year, it's going to hurt your retention. Last year, they kind of had to have the number one class, and that's kind of why we were angling towards it down the stretch, saying, hey, look, this is realistic. They don't have those same needs this year. Now, they still have to successfully address offensive tackle, but even more than getting a third offensive tackle in this class is getting one out of the portal. Correct. It's all intertwined. It all has to be married together. Portal rankings are stupid because it doesn't account for actual, the roster strength. It usually doesn't account for what you lost in the portal. So will they have top five class again? Logic dictates they're going to be right in that neighborhood. But it just kind of depends. Right now, they're in great shape for Derek Cooper. But I've heard Miami is hurting for cash. So maybe Miami has another round of fundraising in October and changes that dynamic entirely. They're probably still trying to rebound from paying so much for an offensive tackle. Long way to go. A lot of economic factors in place. We've been chronicling kind of the staff's approach. Yes, they're a little bit frustrated. Yes, that makes you feel like they're a little bit more likely to get Tyler Atkinson and Derek Cooper. They're usually not emotional when it comes to this, but they're human, and I think they are a little bit frustrated right now. But Atkinson is the position that they need. Cooper, they don't want a guy that – the problem with KJ Edwards was he was going to be expensive and they didn't think he would cut in line. Cooper's a little bit different. He'll be expensive and they do think he'll cut in line. So you kind of have to factor in so many different things, and that's what we're always doing over at Inside Texas. There's a lot going on. You can kind of tell who they're going to get by who they have to get.
Yeah, 100%. And we just saw the depth chart. If you want to understand – there's a lot of money on this roster, guys, and we're getting our value, but there's a lot of money on the roster. Retention is more valuable. You don't want to pick up X five-star and then
there's a reason I celebrate getting Nick Robertson and Max Wright. It's because they're not going to cost a lot. They're going to have high upside developmental curves down the road. It's going to take them a minute probably. Things are going to have to thin out, but they allow you to go get some more expensive players. And then, you find the John Turntine guy that's not holding people over a barrel like some other offensive tackles. When you find the middle eval like that, that's a win too. But you guys should celebrate that wide receiver class right now. Cohen Brown and Chris Stewart are studs.
I know.
But you're not paying Aaron Gregory money. And you had an expensive class last year. If you had an expensive class last year at a position, it's probably going to be different the following year. It has to be. That's why you got to hit on your evaluations. But I would celebrate those wide receivers. It's going to allow you to go bigger in 2027 probably. Maybe it even allows you to go if Sark gets antsy, right? maybe he makes a late run at one of the five-star guys. But they were expensive last year. They don't like the national class in the 2026 cycle. So fans should celebrate it's not necessarily money ball because these guys are studs. They should celebrate when Texas gets these more underrated guys, but still very talented players, like we named Max Wright, Nick Robertson, Chris Brown, Cohen Brown, or Chris Stewart, Cohen Brown, not Chris Brown, Cohen Brown.
Bad mental eval on Chris Brown, dude.
Bad mental eval on Chris Brown, but he can move. So it's the roster construction, which is probably the number one or number two thing. It's either culture or roster construction, and they go hand in hand. That Sark has done. He really understands how to manage his roster.
Yep, and you got Jermaine Bishop, the lowly three-star. That's gonna play wide receiver. All right, guys. You just got a lot of value out of this video. Guess what? There's even more value over on InsideTexas.com. We are offering new members only $1 to sign up until 8:30, until the Ohio State game. So as the depth chart updates, there's no better staff in the land. Whenever fall camp starts, you're going to know exactly what's going on with the team. Of course, recruiting is always huge between Justin, Eric, and Coach Dub. And then you got Paul and Ian giving you the sick analysis always on what can come and how these players match these schemes the depth chart put in action. $1 until 8:30. You, listener, viewer, need to join InsideTexas.com today. Also, our man Paul Wathington, he dropped his 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus, Thinking Texas Football, 13th annual. Paul breaks down the entire team with his classic wit and intelligence. It's a great read. You're going to want to check it out. But not just that, guys. You're going to get an SEC preview for all other teams. You're going to get a nice piece up front on roster management and what football looks like in college football with all this money thrown around. And Eric talked about it. Hey, this is how you got to manage your roster. And then also, Eric did a nice recruiting piece in this book as well. All the links are in the description. You can get the ebook today from Smashwords, or you can buy the print version, put it up on your bookcase. Chat, y'all did a great job today. It was fun talking with y'all. Eric, thank you for spending time with us, breaking all of that down. Coach Dub as well. We went a little long, but I consider this an important episode. The first episode me and Eric ever did was a depth chart episode. All right, guys.
Hold on. This is in the works. Actually, Paul's working on getting Lou Ferrigno to do that.
I was going to say, I was like, Paul, I can record it for you. You know how, dude, it takes me 3 hours to record a 20-minute Texas Homer video. I cannot imagine having to record an audiobook. That'd be a nightmare, especially with a perfectionist like Paul. He's going to want to nail every syllable. All right, chat. Thank you, Eric. Coach, thank you as well. This was IT Live. It was brought to you by the one and only Academy Sports and Outdoors. Make sure to get all your gear for the summer months. Have a great day, y'all, and hook 'em.